We have one little footnote. Director Hoffman will not be joining us today, and in her place is Board President Rick Raleigh. So thanks for attending, Rick. The agenda does state that he will be remote, but he managed to make it here today, so great. Roll call.
Director Raleigh.
Present.
Director West.
I'm here.
Chair Limbaugh.
Here.
And online, I see Director Page. That's all I see right now. Okay. And then for staff, presenting staff, we have Mike Simpson, Tess Faye Demasey, Doug Kearns, Melanie Bailey, Jerry Burns, and Matthew Johnson.
You guys look at the agenda?
Yes.
I'll move okay with it? Approval.
All right. Okay. Approved meeting July 15th. I think it's good.
So
yeah,
moved.
Good. Okay. Our first item up is the recharge basin status, and Melanie.
Yes, good morning. So this was requested by Director Limbaugh, I believe at the last PRIO. So this is just gonna be a brief update on the recharge basin efforts that we are doing for the OSDA and Morongo Basin area. So current status, the East Ames Retchie Basin, the monitoring well design, we are pending the 100% design any day now. The recharge basin design, we are currently reviewing the 90% design. The environmental and permitting, we have that in progress. We have reviewed the draft ISM&D, and we're pending some updates. We're looking to bring that back to committee and the board sometime in September and October for the public hearing on that. We have completed the AB 52, the tribal consult letters. We have to consult the tribes on any projects that we're doing, and we have completed that. For grant update, we did apply to the Bureau of Reclamation on a Water Smart application, but we did receive in June a notification that the project was not considered for award on that Bureau of Rec Water Smart grant. But we do have the DWR amendment for the Prop 1 Round 2 grant funding in the amount of $480 and $480,118. And the design completion deadline for that is December of 2025. We're on target to finish that design. And then the construction completion, we're on target for that in December of 2026 is when completion needs to be built for that. So we're looking at, it's about a 9-month build is what we're estimating. So what's next for East Ames? We're trying to work on the CEQA. The Western Joshua Tree permitting, we have estimated about 6 months. We haven't started that. We're waiting on a few items for those designed to be completed. And then the multi-completion monitoring well design completion, we have that in progress. So we're going to work on completing that. And then the final basin design and potholing. So in the budget for this fiscal year, we did budget $2 million, and so the engineer's opinion of probable cost is somewhere between $10 and $12 million for that project. So we did commit to, for this fiscal year, finalizing the design of the basin and the well, finalizing the CEQA and permitting, drilling of the monitoring well, and then in fiscal year 27 is likely around the time that we would begin the basin build. And the remaining of that aspect would be budgeted in fiscal year 26-27. This is a good point to stop right here for any questions on East Ames.
Marina?
Thank you. Melody did answer a couple of my questions before the meeting, but one was about the monitoring well. And the other comment I wanted to make is the recharge basin that we have today in Ames just has very poor percolation rate, and it's small, I guess. And then access is kind of a bummer because everybody likes to play in the water down there in the wash. We can't really fence it or anything. But the cost of that project actually was well within budget. It was, if I recall, out-of-pocket monies for either. I know Mojave provided money from the, it came from the agreement, pipeline agreement, there was shuffling of monies, and so money was provided for capital projects. And so we used about, I think, I want to say it was under $150,000, and the rest of all of the work, the permitting and CEQA and Everything was bore by Bighorn Desert View through one of its grants. And so while that recharge pond maybe didn't turn out to be as good as we had really hoped, I don't think we're throwing away a lot of cost there. And it's just an unfortunate thing. But I appreciate that we've moved ahead on a new site that will provide additional recharge capabilities, because High Desert Water District is ordering water now. And I expect that to continue. And once this is done, then Bighorn can also resume purchases. Thank you.
Rick, any comment?
No, I do not.
On the environmental, have you identified any issues?
No current issues right now.
You don't have any Joshua trees on your property?
We do have Joshua trees on the property. We do have Joshua trees on the property, and I can talk a little bit more about that on OS Day, since we're a little farther along in that process.
And what type of permits do you need for this?
So,
curiosity.
This one is our most simple, basic permits for this one. So the CEQA, we're doing an ISMND, and then the Joshua Tree Incidental take permits.
Normally, we don't need a lot of permits.
Correct. For this East Ames recharge project, we don't need a lot of permits.
All right. So all in all, Ames means 2 year, 3 years out?
East Ames, we're looking at Christmas time of 2026 completion.
Okay. That's it. You can move on.
Yeah. So OS Day, let's move on to OS Day. OS Day is broken up into two phases. So we have the pilot or demonstration phase is phase one, and then phase two is the permanent phase. So the current status on the demo pilot phase one, the monitoring well design, we have finished the deep well. So the deep well design is at 100%. And then because of some conversation we had with DWR about ponding near the aqueduct, there was a request for two shallow wells to be built into the design. So we're at 60% on design on those two shallow Vados wells. And then the recharge basin itself is at 50% design. That is with ponding review with MWA now. That includes a siphon for that design as well. And then the environmental and permitting, we are in progress. So in, I believe, 2019, don't quote me on that, our CEQA was completed 2019, 2020, sometime in there. And then the Western Joshua Tree Incidental Take Permit, we are in progress. So the update on this is we did submit an application in the fall of last year, and we've been back and forth with CDFW on that. And the most recent thing is last month, CDFW requested that we resubmit our ITP application because there were updates to the relocation requirements for the permit. So in August, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife did release their updated relocation protocol guidelines. And so there are some changes that they're rolling out through there, and I think that's going to impact this project and potentially make it a little easier for us. I don't want to cross fingers there, but I'm hoping that it's going to make it a little bit easier for us to move forward with that. So we are working on that. We have identified property that Mojave owns in the event that we do need to relocate Joshua trees. So we did identify some property for that, both for this project and for the West Victorville banking project, as there's a number of trees on there as well. So we are looking to utilize a piece of property that we kind of have not near the aqueduct that we don't intend to use anytime soon for Joshua Tree relocation. And then once we finish reviewing the design of our recharge basin, the 50% design, that will go to DWR for consult on a number of things for feedback on our design to make sure we can get the DWR permits and approval to move
Quick
forward.
Quick question, what type of access to the aqueduct do we need here? We don't need a whole slice? Is it just going to be a siphon?
It's just going to be a siphon. That's going to come off
surface.
Yeah, it's going to come up onto the road. They're going to have to put
a ramp
or something so that their vehicle can continue to move over it for the demo.
White road.
Currently, yeah, for the permanent phase, it will be a more permanent. We're looking at doing a traveling screen similar to White Road for the permanent. But the idea is that this demo pilot we will have in place for some time and have a feasibility study to ensure it works properly, that we're getting the return on investment out in that area before we move forward with a permanent design. So for the permanent, you'll see on right now on the right-hand screen, the image is just the south basin. That is for the phase one demo. And then the permanent would be designing the phase two, which would be the north end basin. So it would grow into that full 10-acre parcel. We have this in progress right now. We're working on a draft tech memo and conceptual plans. We did receive a Bureau of Rec grant, Water Smart grant, for this project, the design element of phase two. We are still working with Bureau of Rec to revise the scope and budget and get agreements in place. The estimated amount for that grant was $333,000 for the design on that. So what did we commit to for OSDE? For this fiscal year, we committed to finalizing the designs, finalizing the CEQA and environmental permits like the Joshua Tree, and finalizing any kind of DWR permitting and discussion regarding the design on that. And then we committed to doing the deep multi-completion monitoring well. The two shallow Vados wells would come after the basins are built just for kind of how construction will need to go for those. And then the basin build, if we continue to move forward, is looking at fiscal year 2027. So we did budget $2.7 million for this fiscal year, and then the remaining $8.5 million for phase one would come in fiscal year 26-27 and was projected out. And then in phase two, we only budgeted $400K for this fiscal year, mostly just design elements, and then the remaining $10.9 million projected would come in fiscal year 28-29. So the idea is that the demo basin will be operational and working for 12 plus months pilot operation and testing before we move forward with full construction on the phase two.
Okay, Marina, any questions?
Melanie, can you go back one slide of the layout? So what's your strategy on the Western Joshua Tree? Is it the whole site, even though are you gonna be tackling the whole thing at once, and then later on when you do phase two, you'll have that in hand? Anything will be relocated already? And
yeah, currently our plan with the Joshua Tree is kind of tackle the whole site at once. We discussed potentially moving Joshua Trees onto the north side, but then that would be a double mitigation in the future. So we would have to get an ITP for the southern side of the basin. And then if we moved it to the north, we would then have to get another ITP in the future, go through the permitting process again on the north side. So the idea was just kind of remove that obstacle now so we can move forward. And then also it allows for some construction set up on that north side as well, and then ops can get in there and do any kind of maintenance that they need to do without worrying about hitting Joshua have? Trees. Four. How many trees?
Four?
No. No. I believe there was 140 on this parcel.
Okay.
And I guess
can you put them in the banks? Can you relocate them to the banks?
We did look at putting our trees in banks and reaching out to banks, and I can't recall the number off the top of my head, but it was a significant lift to work with banks.
We had a estimate from someone with the BIA of about $5,000 per tree to babysit.
Serious?
Yeah. So in this site, because it is a real take, not like working around a tree, you're going to have to take trees. What is the current, or can you just briefly describe the current relocation strategy now? Is it a little less, is it less onerous than it was before?
I haven't fully read the new relocation guidelines. One of the things that they did change in there was if it was practical to move it to a new location, but there was a statement in there that said they weren't looking for folks to buy land to move trees onto new property, that they would work with us to find where to relocate it.
Hasn't it been documented that the survivability of these trees when they move is very low, even if they're taken care of? Because they have no long-term data, period, about relocation of trees. All the ones that we moved on Morongo died, okay? And that's 30 years ago. I don't know if they have current data that shows that they survive if you move them too far. They just love those mycorrhizas where they're from. Is there any way, it's a $500,000 to move 100 trees. So You got to do what you got to do. Is there any way?
Plus the take permit.
Is there any way that we can buy compensatory lands and get exchanges?
They're not working. The fish and game doesn't work like that anymore with these relocations.
Marina's been involved with this a lot.
Yeah.
Well, they're supposed to buy the land and they don't have any land. One of the arguments that's come out of Palmdale is, if I have to pay a take, then I'm just going to take it. Like, how do you make me take it and care for it?
Exactly.
So that's legal question number one right there. The second legal problem is, how can you make me take a tree that's not on my property? It's on a private property. And I don't know if they've backed off on that, but I know they've acknowledged verbally these two glitches. All right, well, I agree. You should just go forward and finish it. As far as the Western Joshua tree, there's no hope that in 5 years it'll be any better. In terms of process, it'll just probably be more money. So,
yeah, that was...
I do think... And there is better evidence now we can relocate, but the question is, am I paying take or am I relocating? I should not be required to do both.
If you have any of that evidence, please share with...
Yucca Valley, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see the study that was done that says the survivability of the Joshua trees is X percent if they're moved.
It's more anecdotal.
And what's
There's
required?
Trees everywhere that have been moved that live.
Yeah, that information is on the CDFW website.
Years. Well, we're out about...
Ten years?
Almost.
Okay.
And they're blooming.
Size-wise?
The first two actually died, but they offspring 4 or 5 pups.
Okay.
So I don't know. Is that double?
I don't know.
Is that what they call a baby
Joshua tree? Yeah, pup. All right. Well, thank you very much. Very, very
Mark,
interesting.
Any questions?
No.
On this particular recharge site, do we have hydrogeological data about what we think?
Yeah, we did do a geotechnical survey on this.
What we're going to get in
this.
The ground here?
Yes, we did.
And how will it impact any wells that are in that area?
So depth to water is about 600 feet, and we were looking at, I believe, 4 feet recharge per day, if I recall, on previous updates. And so by the time it gets there, it would probably be a couple years before the water reaches the water table.
Say again?
Probably be a couple years before the water reaches the water table, yeah.
Okay. And we'll know more about after you do the test basin?
Yes. After we do the test basin, we should have a better understanding of how quickly that happens, especially because we'll have the monitoring well.
You can put 4,000 acre feet in the water in 2 years, the 4,000 acre feet will reach their well field.
Correct.
Wells.
And we'll have monitoring wells in the area, too, that'll be able to capture that a little bit better.
And one of the best things about this, it's right adjacent to the aqueduct for
yes.
for other purposes. Okay. And you think it's probably going to take 3 more years before we get solid on this project?
I think so, given our other priorities that we're moving forward with, like with what master plan, the urban water management plan, and our resources to do these projects, I think so.
Have we modeled this area other than the Swiss cheese idea?
No? I don't think so. I need to confer with Capo.
Spaghetti model, yeah. Okay. No, that's okay. You don't have to talk Capo. No.
No.
Okay. Any other items on the basins? Is that it?
That's it. That's okay. The quick update. So you had asked for a quick update, Limbaugh, and this was that quick update. If you want to see more, I can bring more in the future.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Next time you get a little more about the Joshua trees, let us know.
Okay.
Next item is purchase order for the water resources field team transducers. That's Jerry's going to talk about that. He's not sitting in the right place. Morning, Jerry.
Hi, good morning. I am Jerry Burns. I'll be discussing authorization of an agreement for transducer equipment from In-Situ Inc. for $125,000 in fiscal year 2026. Right, and on the agenda, I have my intro, issues, fiscal impact, and recommendation. Right, transducers are self-contained water level data loggers. A water level data logger is an instrument that automatically and continuously records fluctuations in water level. Water level data logs are stored in the data logger's memory and can be downloaded using software or can be collected by other means, such as the smart device app. telemetry, or data acquisition system. Transducers have a capacity of 40,000 temperature and water level data points. And these are the two transducers that we currently use, Solenst and In-Situ. Out of our monitoring wells, we have 430 key wells where we do manual measurements and observations. 209 of those wells have transducers in them, and we use that for downloading, assessing, and sometimes we replace them. We have 115 In-Situ transducers and 94 Solents. Right. Our current issues are the existing Solents equipment is nearing the end of their service lives. Every year, we do budget and replace a few of the Solents transducers with new In-Situ transducers. The current Solents transducers are experiencing reliability issues. This includes frequent failures and communication errors. This does result in unreliable data and increased staff time for manual data collection. And in this picture, it kind of shows what we deal with when we're downloading with our Solents equipment. We have on the floor there with the laptop, that cradle is what the transducer is in, and sometimes it doesn't communicate, and it's usually means that it might be dead, it might need to dry out. It usually takes a few days if it needs to dry out. Sometimes it just dies, and we lose all that data that's in it. And that's one of the issues that we're having with them. And then In-Situ transducers, they have been used by MWA since 2019. This includes level-troll transducers, which are used for pressure and temperature logging. And then our barotrol sensors are used for accurate barometric compensation. We also use non-vented direct read cables, which are used for deep wells. These are for wells that are about 300 to 400 and deeper feet and deeper. And then the In-Situ transducers are fully compatible with existing MWA data systems. And in the picture here, we have, I believe it's Rock Springs, and we use, that's the telemetry system that we use. This actually gets uploaded directly to the In-Situ website, and we're able to get that in real time. Some of the benefits of switching completely to In-Situ, it improves data accuracy and the frequency that we can go and get data. It reduces our staff time. It enables remote and automated downloads, long-term durability, reliable groundwater trend analysis and reporting, and it has great customer service. And then in the picture here, this is the direct read cables that we use in our deeper wells. It's a lot easier than having to pull that transducer all the way up from sometimes 600 feet. And then we just, from the top of the well casing there, we just are able to connect a Bluetooth device and upload it to our phones. The fiscal impact, total cost is $125,000. It's fully budgeted in the fiscal year of 2026 for the monitoring equipment allocation. The quote was obtained from In-Situ. In-Situ devices are proprietary. MWA did receive a discount of 12% for the full order. In-Situ was selected for performance, compatibility, and cost effectiveness. In-Situ is currently used in all in MWA systems with proven reliability. The recommendation, staff requests the committee review this item and recommend forwarding to the Board of Directors for approval of the following. Staff requests the Board of Directors authorize an agreement for In-Situ Inc. in an amount not to exceed $125,000 for the transducer program in fiscal year 2026. Any questions?
Maria, you have any questions?
So is it the 94 that you're replacing or?
Yes, yeah. So we're trying to get all those Solents, the 94 that are out there, and replace them with In-Situ.
And then just to be clear, I saw in the paperwork, so this is a sole source.
Yes, yeah.
So all that's been done and I support that. I think this is a good product. Come a long way.
Really? Rick?
No, I agree. For the amount of wells, this is a good deal.
How do you make sure it's reading correctly?
We do QAQC. So we
check them every once in a while with the.
We do our mass runs, and sometimes if we'll do our mass runs, so that's where we get our data from. And then we'll go and
mass runs?
Download
mass.
The data.
Oh,
and then
put a mouse down.
Huh?
Never mind. Yeah, when it doesn't come back, I guess the well's full.
Coke
right?
bottle on the
screen.
Okay. Yeah, so basically, they are calibrated to our 4 manual reads per year on the wells. So that's kind of they're quality checked with our actual human reads to make sure, and adjustments will be made.
How long have you been using these?
Since 2019.
Okay, good. Saves a lot of manpower.
Oh, yes, a lot of time.
And it gives constant reading.
More data.
Which is great.
More yes.
Data. Do we have them in all our key wells? Why not?
The transition process has been slow. We kind of been doing it slowly under...
Okay, so gradually getting the ones like...
Yes.
This is a real key well. This one's kind of a key well.
Yeah, and in addition, we also want to make sure that the wells we're putting these into, we have continuous access and legal access to, because the worst thing is we put them in there and then someone goes and tampers with the well, removes it, runs into it, that kind of thing. So that's a big factor.
I mean, if you had all of them, it would really give you, really give the modeling guys some real good data to mm-hmm. help fortify the model. Yeah. Or whatever we keep yeah. track of. Okay. I guess the committee would move this on to the board since it's already in the budget and go under consent calendar.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we got the monthly updates. Water resources, you pretty much gave us all your update besides a few extenuating things. And we heard from engineering a lot last meeting. But we do have water resources field update. Matt?
Okay, good morning. I have just a brief update of what the field team's been up to. So here is our yearly data collection cycle. Right now in the red rectangle for July, we have water quality sampling. And also this month, we've been focusing on SOP creations and updating our field sampling plan, which is a big thank you to Esme, who's been leading the charge on that. So we have our fall mass run coming up. You saw this slide with Jerry's presentation. So we'll be doing manual measurements on 430 key wells and downloading 209 transducers. So our water quality sampling that we are currently doing, last fiscal year was Este. This fiscal year is Baja. And then moving into next fiscal year will be in the Central Basin. Some of the other highlights that we've been recently, Cal State San Bernardino, their students were able to accompany us on a couple of our sampling sites. So they were able to see demonstrated sampling techniques, water sampling methods, and valuable insight into water careers. So they got to see science behind sampling, proper sample collection. And in the top picture here, you can see Esme, Jerry, and Delilah giving a demonstration to the students. And along with the bottom picture, Delilah is demonstrating a proper water level capture. Oh, this was added today. It was brought to my attention on Indeed. Heather Dyer, she's a general manager of the San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District, gave us kudos, us and Cal State working together. Said that was a great opportunity for both. So ongoing department support, some of the things that we support on, for instance, Jerry's been working with Balance Hydrologics about the ephemeral washes study. We've been doing support work for groundwater banking. We try to do as many public outreach events and help out there as we can. We've also been working on the basin health assessment criteria. And the last little key point is Jerry is presenting at the GRA conference in October. He will be doing an ephemeral washes study presentation. That's all I have for my brief update.
Questions, Rena?
Can you go back one slide?
Yes.
Is this the same group of students or same class that's doing our upper watershed work, or is it just a different group entirely?
That one I'm going to rely on Delilah. Delilah's actually been the main one, a huge, awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Delilah.
Okay. No, this is actually a different group of students. This is actually a program called FLOWS with Cal State San Bernardino. So it included Cal State San Bernardino, Cal State Fullerton, and I think it was UC San Diego students. So it was multiple students doing like field work. So they started off on this field trip coming over to our basin, our Este Basin, and learning some sampling techniques. And I think the following day they went up to Big Bear. And they were doing some like water quality sampling up there.
Okay.
But yeah, this is a different group of students.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, any comment?
Good job.
Yeah, it's very encouraging to have universities bring their people up here, see if they're interested in water. I know UC Davis has a great program with DWR up in Sacramento that they use hundreds of students to supplement, learn, get interested in California water. Okay, next up we got, what's next? Quick verbal engineering update. Quick. No.
Okay.
Like those design cycles, okay. Yeah. Like the whole new panel.
Well, test phase is getting prepared here. I just would just like to say good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Both departments, engineering operations, will be providing an update here. And as we had indicated to the PREO committee a while back that we'd be providing a monthly update on the Mojave River Pipeline Traveling Screen Project, test phase will, he doesn't have a presentation, but he will provide a brief update on where we're at with that project. And I think there might be just a couple other items. So, with that being said, I'll turn over to Tesfaye.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike. So as Director Limba said, you know, last month we did provide detailed updates, and I'm planning to do the next, you know, in September, but this is a verbal update just to provide highlight on the traveling screen project. As you recall, on July 31st, we had a groundbreaking ceremony, which was led by President Rowley and attended by Director West and Hoffman.
Is that telling me? That's okay. Like you were there, you were there, right?
And other representatives, you know, from public officials, our consultants, as well as, you know, staff, and a great thank you for those who worked behind the scene and to make that really wonderful turnout celebration of the project. We are currently holding, you know, keeping a weekly meeting to see, to work on, again, on the back scene, on the construction schedule, submittals, and requests for RFIs. One thing I would like to mention is in discussing the construction schedule, I misstated by saying we will provide an update. I went back and checked their schedule. The way the contractor submitted the schedule is first they have an early start, early finish, late start, and late finish. So in looking at all of the items listed on the schedule, none of the items have passed the late start date yet. Because of that, I do not have a reason to ask an updated construction schedule. However, we will be working with them now this week, and I will have more details on that.
Probably by September meeting, they
yes,
will have an update.
Correct. And then having said that, now so far we have been working on submittals. So we reviewed and approved 33 submittals. 11 of the we have returned for the contractor for review and revision and resubmittal. And there are 6 currently we are reviewing. And this is for submittals, a total of about 50 of them. And as related to requests for information, we received 13, completed 12, luckily without any changed conditions or change order. And one, we are working on it, and we need input from Southern California Edison because it's related to arc flash risk assessment matter, which is subject matter, their specialty. Other than this, I don't have more to come next month. Thank you.
Okay, on the approval of submittals, are all the items that require time to manufacture and deliver, they're all reviewed and ordered? Nothing's hanging out that you're not worried about? As you said, the late...
Yes, now the there are a lot of moving parts. That's why I said I would rather talk about this one next month than today, because it will be like...
Because I know the concern is finishing by a certain date to count underneath the grant coverage.
Since the late start has not has passed yet. For instance, I can just tell you here on mobilization, for instance, the late start is September 12th. And the next critical item related to... I'm just giving you what is approved in the base schedule. And for the equipment building, it can go up to the beginning of October.
Okay.
However, we are not waiting, you know, to hit that date, and we are working with them. I will provide just more updates next month.
Comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Rick?
No, sir.
Okay. Now I guess we're getting to the second part of engineering, operations.
All right. I will turn this over to Doug. He'll provide an update for the operations department.
Yeah.
Right. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
We're going to start off with an update on our PFAS sampling. As I reported last meeting, the state required us to collect samples for PFAS on all of our wells. And we had the state-provided lab technician come out and collect those samples, and now we're starting to get the sample results in. We've got all of the results except for well four, and so far all of the results have been under, the concentrations have been under the consumer confidence report detection level, which is the level that requires you to put those results into the CCR, the consumer confidence report, so we were below that. So all of the wells have been non-detect except for well six. Well six had a slight detection of 2 parts per trillion, and the reporting level is 3 parts per trillion. So we were still underneath that, so we have no further sampling requirements at this time. And we're still waiting for well four. We'll see how that one turns out, but we're anticipating it's gonna be similar to what well three and five were, which were non-detect. And then, as I reported last meeting, we've been having some issues with the wells. Well four, we were able to get all of the surge tank system working again. That got back into service, and then after that, we had the pre-lube solenoid valve take a dump on us. So we had to replace that, and that's this valve right here that's circled in the red. These wells are water lubed, so instead of using oil, they use water to lube up the shaft and the bushings and everything for the pump. So that well's back in service. Well five, that one went down on us, and we did some troubleshooting and found out that it looks more than likely it's going to be the well motor breaker. So we're working on getting a new one of those. And once we get all of our quotes done and everything like that, then we're probably looking at around a couple of weeks. And we should hopefully have that well back in service. Well one, we had a failure on that well, and it kept tripping the main breaker at the site. And so we had a motor company come out, and they did some testing on the motor and found out that the windings were shorted out. So that means we had to remove that motor and have it taken down to the motor shop for repairs. During their investigation, they saw somewhere on the upper thrust bearing, and they recommended that we upgrade that bearing to a higher temperature bearing, because that bearing's one of the most critical ones on the motor. It handles all of the weight of the shaft and everything. So we went ahead and we went with their recommendation on that. So total repair costs are going to be around $18,804, and rebuild time is 10 to 12 weeks, or 10 to 12 days, and they're already in the process of working on it. So we're probably maybe another week or so out before we get that motor back. So here's a picture of well one motor, 600 horsepower. It's a vertical turbine hollow shaft motor. So that means that the shaft that goes all the way down to the pump and spins the impellers goes through the motor and then attaches to the top of the motor in this area here. And here's a picture on the left. There is the motor getting removed. That's Nathan giving direction to the crane operator. And then we've got the motor getting moved into position to be placed on the motor shop's transport there. And now they're just kind of getting it tied up, ready for transport.
You know, Doug, if I can add, it seems like it never fails at the hottest time of the year is usually when this stuff tends to fail. And obviously with the warmer temperatures, it wreaks havoc on electrical components, especially as they age. But there was no other indications leading up to this prior to it. But it just seems like when it rains, it pours.
Yeah.
And summertime tends to cause some of these issues, or we see these issues. So
that's the primary well we've been using to fill our cubed.
Doug, I'll let you
we have five wells that we use, and we usually run them in pairs. One and two usually run together, and then three, four, and five usually run together.
It's other than the problem, I mean, it looks pretty new.
Yeah, it's been a few years since
being broken.
We've had to have this one rebuilt before, but it's been quite a few years since the last time. But the rest of them have been pretty good so far. I mean, knock on wood. But and then this is over at the motor shop. This is our motor here, and they're starting to dismantle it. This top portion here, this is where the shaft comes out, and this is the thrust coupling right here. This is how it attaches to the motor. And this whole assembly right here, this is the ratchet assembly. This prevents the pump from spinning backwards when it turns off, because you've got that big column of water that's still in the pipe there, and it wants to go back down to the aquifer level. And if you didn't have that ratcheting assembly, it would spin the pump backwards. So during their dismantling of this portion, they found a pin. This pin right here had sheared off, so it's similar to what this is right here. And so they are looking into what happened there. They're not really sure quite yet, but they're doing some more investigation, and so that'll be another part that they fix. So this picture on the left here, this is their removing the rotor from the motor. This is the part that spins the pump shaft. And then in the middle there, this is looking from the bottom of the motor up. This is the stator. And all of these wires right here, that's what the windings are. That's the part that shorted out. The short happened somewhere in this area here. And you can kind of see the damage right here in this picture on the right. And what that stator does is when it's energized, it creates electromagnetic field. And with that, it starts to spin this rotor around, and it's connected to the pump shaft, and then spins the impellers, and then water comes out of the ground. Okay. And then here on the left, this is a picture of that upper thrust bearing that we're going to replace. There's another picture of it with it getting removed, so you can kind of get a better shot of it. This whole big piece right here, this is the upper bracket. That's where all the oil sits that lubricates this bearing here. And then on the right here, this is the lower bearing. This one was in good condition, so we didn't have to do anything with that one. Just going to clean it up and reinstall it. And here's just kind of some of the parts and pieces that are inside of the well motor that make up the well motor. And then this is an exploded view just to kind of show you how everything fits together. So you got your upper bracket there. That's this piece here. This is your bearing spacer right there. There's that upper bearing we were talking about that we're going to replace. This is it tore apart with all of the ball bearings out of it. And then the carrier that connects to the rotor shaft here, and then so on. And then this is that thrust coupling that connects the shaft to the rotor as well. And then this is the whole rotor assembly, and that's that ratcheting assembly there, just to kind of give you an idea of all the parts and pieces that go into it. And that'll do it for the update. I'm open to any questions.
Any questions, Brenda?
I did have a question from earlier. Is the aqueduct water tested for PFAS, or have they tested it anywhere?
You know, I'm
I don't know.
Gonna look to Melody.
And it's not critical.
I think
right
they were
now.
Tracking that one time, but if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, Melody, they do
fire retardant
sample.
Or they've sampled at least once.
So the MWQI does do sampling on the aqueduct and the State Water Project water. In the past, they have done PFAS, but I believe it's just been for studies and things like that. It's not regularly sampled.
Okay, well, thank you. But for now, at least our RQ water is clean.
Yeah.
And what contractor are you using, or pump company are you using for this one? Just curious.
It's Energy Management Corporation, yeah.
So, Marina, just to add to that, staff, we pulled it ourselves, yes, with the local crane company. Yeah, so staff is able to pull the motors, and then we called, was it?
Motor shop.
Yeah, the motor shop.
Energy management. They used to be GP motor.
And get it sent to them directly, and then when they're done with it, they'll send it back up, and staff will reinstall it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Come here, Rick.
Yeah, just a question on the one that's broken here. How deep is that well, and what's the capacity of that?
It's the bowls are set at 220 feet, and capacity is 3,600 GPM.
500 horse or 600 horse?
What's 600 horsepower.
Motor cost?
Or I'm sorry, not 600 horsepower, 450 horsepower.
450.
Huh? Sorry.
What does the new pump cost?
I don't know.
It's been
top of your head.
50,000?
Probably somewhere in that neighborhood between 50 and 75,000. It's been a while since we've done a new one, but I'm going to guess due to inflation, probably somewhere in that neighborhood. Pump and motor, right? Probably right in that. Yeah, obviously it depends on horsepower.
50,000 is a good deal every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
For a rebuild.
Yeah, for the rebuild, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? On that.
Nope, that's it. No, all our boosters are 600 horsepower. That's what I got confused.
Okay.
So this is just an update. This is all in your budget. You're not looking for money or anything.
No. Item number 7, State Project Water Deliveries and R-Cube Summary. That's in our report, right?
It's just a report, yes.
Okay. Any questions on water deliveries? Are we still letting out at the hydro unit?
Yep.
Okay. General manager? Anybody want to speak for the general manager?
There are no comments or updates on the general manager report.
Next time. Any public participation?
Not at this time.
Okay. Anything you guys want to talk about next meeting? Probably get time for water resources, get them here. Find out what's going on with that model in the Water Master, yeah? Well, since I think the court thinks we're going to have a whole model for the basin, so maybe we could talk a little bit about that next meeting, about what where our model's going and what we need to make sure we have a complete basin model, at least for Mojave River, and then we'll talk about everything else. And Wesley, probably tell us again about what's happening in Victorville. I know it's a slow It's kind of lumbering along, so that's okay. Rick?
Thanks for sitting in for Kathy.
Marina?
Good.
Okay, thank you, staff, for your reports, and be safe out there.
That was an interesting.